T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
We have to talk about something that happened 49 years ago today. Now, this was 1973, and this gay bar caught on fire. And we had somebody call the show yesterday who was an emergency room nurse when some of the gay men were coming into the emergency room from that fire. And she just talked about how horrific it was. And what's really sad is that because these people were gay, just because they were gay, there wasn't a lot of empathy or sympathy for what they'd gone through. And the mentality at the time caused some people to think they got what they deserved. Well, yesterday, the city council recognized that mistake on the part of the city and change things. And Clancy Dubos has talked about how he was a young reporter, 18 years old, very young reporter, working for the Times-Picayune. And he says, as I approached the corner, what I saw stopped me cold. And this is in an article in Gambit. He writes about this. The street was packed with firefighters, media, and gawkers. And a man with much of his flesh burned off and hanging from his limbs. He sat on the curb, facing the fire, weeping, begging for help. I had to turn away, at least momentarily. Robert Fiesler is the author of the book Tinderbox, The Untold Story of the Upstairs Lounge Fire and the Rise of Gay Liberation. Robert, welcome to our show.
Scoot, happy to be talking to you about this, and I appreciate that you're devoting the time to help honor the Upstairs Lounge dead. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad we've changed. There's still a lot of change that needs to still take place, but a lot has changed. And one of the reasons that this is a sensitive topic for me is because, you know, I remember in the mid-70s when disco was just really starting to hit, and the gay mm-hmm. clubs in the quarter had the best disco. So my wife and I and our married friends, we went to the gay bars all the time to mm-hmm. enjoy the music, the disco, because they had the best music. And so going to a gay bar was a quite acceptable thing in the 70s. And yet this happened, and it's almost as if people just wanted to almost pretend it didn't happen.
Sure. And you, as you bring up, the French Quarter had a teeming gay underworld of a lot of hopping bars in 1973. And the Upstairs Lounge Bar, which tragically was burned in the arson in 1973, was no exception. Not enough is said about the fact that it was a great bar environment, a community gathering space, a place for fun events like amateur theatrical melodrama performances. At times, it was a worship space for a gay church, and just for fun stuff. There'd be drag review performances, there'd be holiday shows, Easter bonnet contests. I mean, it was a place where they had a baby grand piano in the front room, a place where if you were of a certain cadre of semi-closeted gay men, and you walked up to the second-store bar on the corner of Iberville and Charter Street, you were going to hear that piano music, and you were going to be having a great time. And what's so tragic is that violence struck that environment, that special egalitarian crowd, so quickly and resulted in 32 deaths.
And Robert, talk about why there were so many deaths. I mean, I've just heard horrific stories about this bar.
Sure. I mean, it was a nondescript bar, like only accessible right by a barely advertised signage and a winding staircase. And that was important in the era of when queer life, gay life was criminalized and we didn't have body autonomy, right? So you could be punished for private bedroom behavior. You could be punished for drinking or working in a gay bar. You could be punished for if you were gay and you owned or rented a home or occupied space on a sidewalk. So you wanted privacy if you were going into one of these oases. And the upstairs lounge, what would happen is you would duck into this side door on Iberville Street, and you would walk up a twisting stairwell that was the lone entrance and exit to this very large cavernous bar on the second floor. And on the Sunday night of June 24th, 1973, what made that the fact that going up this staircase, although ordinarily for gay men, was a privilege, right? Mm-hmm. Walking up this staircase up, you know, we were heading up, up and away from the world oppressed you into this portal to your favorite social club. However, that, you know, that portal became a source of horror. Because on the night in question, the Sunday night, June 24th, 1973, an arsonist emptied a bottle of lighter fluid and then produced a spark in that stairwell that had been the only accessible point for the gay public. And gay men became trapped, imprisoned, in fact, in this bar. And they were so many lives were claimed in this incredibly fast-moving fire that lasted for just less than 20 minutes.
Right. And Robert, this person purposely set this fire. Now, it's my understanding that he was kicked out of the bar or wasn't allowed in. Do you know
Correct.
That story?
Yeah. So the gentleman's name is the primary suspect because the upstairs lounge fire is still considered an unsolved crime. But the gentleman's name was Roger Dale Nunez, and Roger Dale Nunez had a criminal record. He was also wanted on, you know, in violation of probation the night that he drunkenly entered the upstairs lounge bar when on a busy night. Started harassing customers, provoked a fight, and got clocked right in the chin, fell over, and he was violently ejected from the bar. And as he was ejected, two people heard him scream, "I'm going to burn you all out." I'll repeat that for your radio listeners. Roger Dale Nunez, as he's been being dragged from the upstairs lounge bar, screams, "I'm going to burn you all out." That's what criminologists call motive, anger. And then so about a minute later or so, a drunken person, vaguely being of the same description as Roger Dale Nunez, enters into that Walgreens on Royal and Iberville, buys a certain size and can of lighter fluid, and then moments after that, that same size and can of lighter fluid is emptied into the upstairs lounge front staircase, and then the spark is produced, which resulted in the horror and carnage.
It seems like police knew about this guy, and yet it's almost as if it wasn't that important to go prosecute him or to find him because the victims were gay.
Right. I mean, it was considered such an embarrassing, awkward crime for the city, right? The city didn't acknowledge the fact that they had these teeming gay bars. And in the scene of devastation that followed the upstairs lounge tragedy, literally an explosive moment of flames exploding through the windows of a second-story bar on the fringe of the French Quarter, right? You had upstairs lounge patrons seeing Roger Dale Nunez in the crowd, grabbing him and trying to drag him to police officers who don't want to hear it. They give the proverbial move along. They don't want to pay attention. And beyond that, the police catch Roger Dale Nunez. They have him in custody a mere week later. By what happened was they they had gone knocking, they would have found him faster. But the state fire marshals found Roger a mere two doors down from the upstairs lounge bar, asleep in a second-story apartment. So if the police had merely gone knocking, they would have found him. And then what happened? The police caught him and then lost him from custody in the oddest of circumstances. This was an investigation that was, you could say, is there negligence and competence? Where is their intent? Let's just say the investigation was botched because the chief suspect, Roger Dale Nunez, was never questioned by the police, even though they ended up closing the investigation in August of that year without answers. The city didn't want all the embarrassment, right, of focusing any more on this crime within its gay underworld, which then in 1973 was considered, you know, unsympathetically, of course, a part of a criminal establishment. These men were considered sex criminals, and that's why there wasn't the proper amount of compassion, sympathy, attention paid to this terrible calamity. It was the deadliest fire on record in New Orleans history and the worst mass killing of queer citizens, gay and lesbian citizens, in 20th century America, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the worst mass killing was at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando.
You got it. It was a record never meant to be broken, right? Yeah. It took that long, and it took the advent of serious semi-automatic firearms to come anywhere close to matching this scope of death.
You know, I'm really disheartened by a woman who attended a memorial in 2018. Her name is Holly Bradford. And she is quoted in some articles written about this now since its 49th anniversary and since the city council finally did something to recognize their mistake and not recognizing the victims. She said that radio talk show hosts joked about burying the remains of the victims in fruit jars.
Yep. Yes, that was the joke by, you know, the equivalent of the type of shock jock of the era. And that was considered good humor for the time period. People who weren't ready to, a city that wasn't ready to acknowledge the reality that it was gay populace and that everyone likely knew a gay or lesbian person, instead reacted to the tragedy with that kind of callousness. The jokes are like, did you hear about the burning queens? There were several other jokes I don't want to repeat, but that was a common way for the city to acknowledge what was happening and to minimize the botched police investigation and the fact that, and it's very sad, there were survivors to the fire, right, who were suffering immediate trauma and needed help, right, in an emergency moment, and that there were family members, right, who lost fathers, right, and there were children who were affected by this at a time where gay men often married women prior to divorcing and coming out of the closet. Right. So there were children that lost fathers, breadwinners, people lost uncles and family members, and there were families struggling to reclaim their deceased relatives and to try to do what they could in a time when of religious biases, right? When they were trying to find a way to get these individuals respectfully buried, right? Held or at least have a respectful funeral. And in many cases, such as there was a local guy, an upstairs lunch victim named Clarence McCloskey. We spoke at length about him at the council meeting yesterday because Clarence's sister Rose Little issued a statement. But according to Rose Little yesterday, she let it be known, and it was an incredibly powerful moment, that her brother Clarence, following the upstairs lounge fire, was denied a Catholic funeral by the local parish because that he had died, the fact that he had died in a gay bar.
God, that's just so unbelievable. It really is. And for the record, it wasn't me that made those jokes. I was just really young, just getting into the business. I'd like to know who said that. All I know is that apparently some radio hosts were making fun of such a tragedy. But it's sad that that was a sign of those times. And I guess a lot changed from 73 to say 75 when disco really started to hit. I think a lot changed in those a few years.
Sure. I mean, you would start to see attitudes adjusting. The development of a larger, more open gay population at various points, and then also you had starting in the late 70s, you had actually gay and lesbian activists who were using their real names, demanding to be put on news cameras, and you know, come what may, even being willing to piss off their employers by letting it be known that this was their lifestyle and they deserve rights in New Orleans. And I think you're right. I mean, that disco did have a significant role in the fact that the fashion of it and in the egalitarian nature of the way that disco worked, it brought everyone together on the dance floor, right? That became one way in especially the mid to late 70s for a lot of people to affiliate with New Orleans hopping, very large gay and lesbian community.
You know, I had a moment of epiphany when Donna Summer passed away, and I was writing a blog about her and talking about how my wife and I used to go to the gay bars, and Love to Love You Baby by Donna Summer, one of her early hits, was one of the really early disco songs. I know it doesn't sound too disco-y compared to Saturday Night Fever, but it was one of the early disco songs that I remember dancing to on the dance floor. And in talking about that, I realized that I still go to gay bars. I mean, quite often Sunday afternoon, I'm at the Bourbon Pub watching the videos. I still go to gay bars, but a lot of people in my generation all of a sudden had a different attitude about going to gay bars. And it's interesting how the boomer generation in some ways became very judgmental of gays after going through a period early in their life when they were just so supportive of equality on every level.
Right. I mean, the backlash, especially starting in the 80s and especially with the advent of the AIDS crisis, right, was a lot of individuals hypocritically going back and in some senses taking political stances that betrayed some of their friends from the prior decade. And that was very – and that's just a sign that, you know, we're a nation of forward steps and backward steps, right? Yeah. And we've been dealing with this all day with the prior news you were talking about, striking down of Roe v. Wade. But we're a nation where you know, in the late 70s, Miami-Dade County can pass an ordinance, right, prohibiting discrimination against gay folk. And then the next month there can be a referendum led by the anti-homosexual spokesperson, Anita Bryant, right, that strikes it down. It's within the next few months of it. And that push-pull is the nature of our democracy, I think, and also the nature of the fact that there is a very deep social bias, and I don't know why, about because I'm still trying to sort it out, about this certain specific individual who wants to privately practice love in a certain manner. And I think a lot of it gets to conservatives' complete discomfort with the right to privacy, except in their own context. I mean, when you think about what Lawrence v. Texas was, the Supreme Court decision in 2003 struck down anti-sodomy laws. What that fundamentally said is that gay men and lesbians, or non-married couples too, or married couples who didn't want to have just the specific legally defined intercourse, could be permitted to do so.
Right, and that case was based on a neighbor who didn't like gays, and he looked into the window and he timed when they were having sex. He figured out when they might be having sex, saw them having sex, and called in a false firearms alert to get the police out there to catch him having sex. So, I've talked about that a lot. I have to move on.
To the right to privacy, though. And then when you violate the right to privacy, I think this is what happens. You set up laws that start to stigmatize people. And then if something happens in an emergency moment, like the Upstairs Lounge Bar in 1973, those stigmatized people, if they're affected by violence, people are not going to be sympathetic to them because the law has already declared their lifestyle, their identity, criminal.
Well, it's a shame, and I'm glad the perception of that for most people has changed. Robert Fiesler, thank you for being with us. Robert is the author of the book Tinderbox, The Untold Story of the Upstairs Lounge Fire and the Rise of Gay Liberation. Robert, thanks for being with us, and happy Gay Pride Month.
Happy Pride to you, and United We Stand on behalf of the Upstairs Lounge scholars and families and survivors. United we stand.
All right.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.